Speaking of legislative outside income, there is a bill in the legislature that would regulate the outside income of lawmakers, and it is sponsored by my next guest, State Senator Brad Hoylman. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm well, Susan. Thank you very much for having me.
Are you eating a bagel? You're usually joining me as you're eating a bagel.
Exactly. No, this time I'm actually in the environs of Albany. We're having our Democratic Senate retreat as we speak.
Okay, got it. Well, welcome back. First, I want to know what you think about the just released Pay Commission report.
Overall, I think they did a good job. Look, it's been 20 years since my colleagues and I have received any kind of raise. I believe that it was way past due, and hopefully this will correct the situation for my colleagues, as well as provide incentives to govern better, more professionally, and free and clear of outside special interests.
So did the commission have the authority to eliminate outside income and reduce the number of legislative stipends, LULUs, in your opinion? Because there does seem to be a question among some lawmakers about whether or not they had that authority.
Well, I think that if they didn't, we should go in and pass legislation to limit outside income along the same lines as are imposed by Congress. It would seem fair and equitable to have the same standards that Congress has and the New York City Council has and a lot of other municipal, state, and federal legislatures.
And that's what your legislation does?
It does. It would do the same thing, limit income to 15% of your base salary, restrict the fiduciary relationships that might exist. For example, if you're a lawyer, you can't practice and have private client-lawyer relationships. You should be serving the public first and foremost, and we need to eliminate any types of conflicts. We saw in the Silver case where those do arise, and I think the legislature needs to act on it. I hope it's something that we could do in short order. It's something that the Democratic Senate Conference has supported for some time now.
So just I'm just slightly confused because does the legislature have to pass legislation in both houses to deal with outside income, or does this report just released from this pay raise commission do that, unless you guys come back and say no?
I think that it would be prudent for us to pass legislation to that effect.
That's what the governor said yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, as a belt and suspender, you know, measure, and put to bed the question of whether this commission has the authority to do it or not.
Okay, so basically, if your bill passes both houses, it would supersede anything that was just released by the pay raise commission.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. Meanwhile, I heard that you've just been made chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I'm very excited for that new position and honored and humbled because there's a lot of work to do in a whole host of areas, including a bill that I've discussed with you for years, the Child Victims Act, which would, of course, lift the statute of limitations in cases of child sexual abuse and provide adult survivors 1 year to file civil claims against their abusers or the institutions that might have harbored them.
When people who are advocates of the Child Victims Act talk about it, this is the bill that they are referencing, just so my listeners know. Were you concerned a few weeks back when the governor said something to the effect that, you know, we don't want to bankrupt the Catholic Church?
Well, I think nobody wants to bankrupt any valued institution, whether it be a church or a school, public or private, a yeshiva or a youth organization. The truth is that there are no examples of voluntary bankruptcies by religious institutions when 1 year look back windows have been imposed in other states. So all you have to do is look at recent history and ascertain that these institutions carry insurance policies for a reason. And maybe that's why the insurance companies are very much opposed to the Child Victims Act, but we're ready to go to Albany and pass this legislation as soon as we can.
What are some of your other priorities as they relate to the courts?
Well, certainly the issue of court reform is top of mind.
Oh, boy. That is something. I mean, they've been talking about that since former Chief Judge Judith Kaye issued a report back in the late 90s. I mean, there's really some pressing issues, some pressing reforms that need to take place.
Absolutely. I think, you know, resources for the court, I'm very concerned about backlogged cases, which particularly impact communities of color and other vulnerable populations. So I want to take a look at that. There's a lot of legislation in that regard. And of course, the way and, you know, the procedure, you know, for the appointment of judges is of interest. So there's a lot of work to strengthen our judiciary. It is the one of the branches of government that I think is most vulnerable during these times of Donald Trump.
There is this thing that we have in New York where some judges, especially in like local courts, don't have to have a law degree. Is that something that you're going to be looking at?
Yes. You know, I know it's a matter of in some cases of finding people who are
actual lawyers. Yeah.
But, you know, I would think it would be a baseline requirement. On the other hand, you know, we need to dig into that issue and see what the limitations are and make certain that qualified people are on the bench.
Right. I mean, you don't have somebody, you know, doing surgery who doesn't have a medical license.
Yeah. On the other hand, I will say as a lawyer, we are not, you know, always the smartest people in the room, and in many cases, not even in the top 5 or 10. So lawyers are good about making other professions and other people feel excluded. And so I would take, you know, that into consideration, too, that all experiences are important for a judge to handle a caseload appropriately and fairly.
I wanted to pivot to something else. You are the sponsor of the Climate and Community Protection Act, which is a bill that will get New York to 100% renewable energy by 2050. There is also a bill that you're supportive of that will get New York to 100% renewables by 2030. Why not just back the bill that will get us there faster?
Well, you know, a lot of change in government is incremental, and particularly on the climate front. We didn't have discussion of these issues until very recently. In fact, I was the first, you know, the Senate Democrats were the first legislative body to actually hold any type of public forum on climate change in Albany. So needless to say, there's a lot of work to be done on that front. The governor, to his credit, has advocated through executive order. We need to codify those protections. But it's also an enormous job-creating opportunity because, you know, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the top job, fastest-growing job in the U.S. is wind turbine technician. And the second fastest-growing job in the United States is solar panel installation expert. So these are not just opportunities to address climate change and have New York do its fair share, but also take advantage of the green economy and provide good jobs, protect working people and their families, and really put New York on a path towards sustainability that the Republicans, unfortunately, on your very program, Susan, if you remember correctly, had disputed the science behind climate change.
I do remember that. We're out of time. I'd love to have you back to talk more about this issue. We've been speaking with State Senator Brad Hoylman. He is the new chairman of the State Judiciary Committee. Thank you again for joining me.
Thanks so much, Susan. Happy holidays.
You too. Bye-bye.
Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.